Telling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
I can't even tell you how excited I am for this.
I'm good.
Hello, welcome.
Good. Well, you know, we're going to calm and chill your morning this
Yay,
morning.
Yay! This is what I'm here for. We've been going up and down. It's been riding a wave.
Oh, yeah. No, your mind is just going to go to parallel universes this morning.
I'm going to love
it. So, I don't know if you realize that we're still calling it Traveling Tunes, but what we've shifted to is doing a different instrument.
Awesome.
So, and this week we're doing the sitar.
Which I don't actually know what that is.
Okay, good.
Sorry.
I'm glad you asked. It's a stringed instrument, and the bottom is usually a gourd.
Like a literal...
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a big deal for instruments like in Africa and Asia. Not so big in New Zealand, but...
No, they usually use that for like water here. So water carrying.
Yeah, vessel. Yeah. So, and then a really, really long neck. So you get this sort of like a teardrop with a really giant long neck. And then the other, well, it's got metal strings. So that gives it its twang. But the other thing that makes a quite different, say, than a guitar is underneath the strings you play is another four or five strings that just sit there and chill and vibe
what?
The whole time.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah, that's why you get such a fat sound.
Yeah,
so you've
got
this, they're called sympathetic strings. So they just sit and vibe based on the energy from you playing the sort of guitar type
so
strings
your
above.
Fingers
it.
Don't reach those other
no,
ones.
No, wow.
So kind of like a harp-ish kind of thing. So it's kind
of
just...
but they're just in the background. So you would tune them so that they would fit with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, so, you know, this isn't a world music show per se. So we're playing sort of, you know, Western pop songs that have used it. And so I don't know if everyone's using it properly here or... if they're like abusing the history of the instrument.
George Harrison was quite obsessed with the zither for a period. Actually, how do you pronounce it? Is it zither?
Sitar.
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 Ah, okay.
Cool. Yeah, and well, a couple of the tracks we'll play from is around that same time where.
Yes.
So there's this guy, Ravi Shankar, who was amazing in India. And for some reason, I guess, you know, part of the sort of hippie consciousness. They started enjoying him in the States. He even played at Woodstock.
Oh, that's. That's right. Actually, they're playing the Woodstock movie in a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
so you'll probably see him doing his thing.
Yeah, he'll be there. And so, you know, of course, if you're a great guitarist, you might imagine that you can play that. And George Harrison really, you know, I think in 68, he released a whole album, his solo album, and he has sitar on it. And so, yeah, so sort of the 60s playing with sitar.
Do you think that had something to do with the psychedelic drugs that were happening, that particular sound just resonated in the way that strings did in the 60s?
Well, absolutely. It is part of, you know, this is what we academics call Orientalism, which is the sort of kind of fantasy version of other countries. And this fantasy version of India was that, you know, everybody's just high and Buddhist and Hindu and spiritual.
As opposed to poor.
And people dance around with silk scarves. And so, the drugs and this was sort of this imagination of India without actually talking to Indian folks about what your life's really like. It does have a bit of that we just get these sort of imaginary pictures in our head from the sound of an instrument. So should we start with Traffic, Paper Sun?
Shall we? I'm quite excited about this too because I quite like a bit of Traffic. All right, cool. Oof.
Thank you.
Okay, we just might fade out of that full-length version of this epicness. So that was awesome.
You're not really being transported to India. You're being transported to 1960s Britain's fantasy of India. As long as you know the difference.
Let's talk about that.
Still enjoy it. It was a great time.
It's kind of it's a difficult thing, that whole cultural appropriation thing, because on one hand, sometimes it means that people go to the source, and then other times it's just like, no, you're just taking that wholesale and not even paying the artists or representing the work properly.
It can be a gateway drug, as people call it, and people can, and they did. They did try to get into Ravi Shankar as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, then you're also taking an instrument that some people, take 40 years to master, like chess, and just jamming on it.
Yeah.
And that's how you play it, bling bling.
Which I guess has some relevance, like some guitar players, like Jimi Hendrix wasn't formally trained either, and he just kind of wiggled his way through it. But when you're taking someone's actual cultural kind of thing, then it puts it in a whole different sort of category, I guess.
I mean, the sitar is probably, I guess not super vulnerable, like we would think of sometimes with cultural appropriation, as people that have already really, but on the other hand, it's more about where they're vulnerable is in these sort of fake notions of India. So the sitar has such a strong history itself as an instrument and its own music. And it would be equivalent to like the piano in that it's just something that people master.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it'd be more people's sort of fake perceptions of the India that brings on, that everyone just runs around on LSD or something.
So do people go to India to learn this, or do they just hear it? And
George Harrison did.
He totally did.
And
he was a Buddhist as well.
Like, yeah, so he did try to do it right as much as,
the quote authentic way.
Yeah, and people back in all the Beatles, he loved India so much and he brought all the Beatles there.
Yeah.
And then, he's like, oh, dudes, you got to get into this. It's so amazing. And then I don't know if you've read some of the backstories, then he brought some of their wives and then some of them hated it it became, a big deal. But he did really try to get into it as authentically as he
could. And he also brought Ravi Shankar on albums as opposed to just messing around with it himself as well, which is, a different thing too, I suppose.
Yeah, so, but, this time is so weird that, a lot of the weeks we've been doing this show, the 60s and 70s are super experimental.
Yeah.
And I think I just figured it out. Okay, yeah, it was the drugs. Okay, but but also now people have synthesizers.
Yeah.
And computers. So you can just dial up any sound.
Mm-mm.
So then they had that same craving, but yet then they would use, which is obviously giving us lots of fodder for this show. Mm-hmm. But so they would use these crazy things for reals because you couldn't just sort of tune it in. So should we go to our next song, T-Rex? Yes.
Yep.
And he called it Chrome Sitar. So,
there you go.
Now, this is from the next decade.
No, this is around the same time. Oh, you're right.
75.
You're right. It is 76.
Yeah.
Cool.
So come on, little girl, won't you hold?
Cool.
That's good.
So I don't know if some of you with acute, you know, and adorable ears could maybe hear those sympathetic strings, those ones underneath. So you get the ones that they're playing, sort of plucking, right, like similar to a guitar, but then there's other ones that just sort of jam and echo in the background.
Is that just because they were the berate?
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
Yeah, yes, from exactly you playing the other ones, the other ones, you know, sympathetically.
Yeah.
But yeah, without, you're not plucking them.
Yes. So similar to Phil Spector's like Wall of Sound, where he just used massive reverberation, but that was like in...
Yeah,
in,
so this comes along, you know, sort of hundreds of years before Phil Spector, the North Indians, you know, like had it going on. They knew how to create that wall of sound. And
yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, I guess a lot of, you know, instruments, obviously the guitar kind of traces to Arabia, you know, I mean, you know, and, you know, obviously drums are everywhere. So, but yeah, to get this sort of ancient, but also really sort of noble instrument sort of popping into our pop. But I think people like it. It does create such a great, you know, sound to add to the mix of what you're hearing.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's kind of like one of those instruments that you kind of, like, when it's there, it's like, it suddenly adds this kind of ethereal quality or something to the sound.
Yeah, I'll name some other famous songs for people to listen out for. Norwegian Wood and Across the Universe. The Rolling Stones, Paint It Black. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, is that on the sitar? Yeah, of course it is.
And Paul Young, Every Time You Go Away. And Stevie Wonder, Sign, Sealed, Delivered.
Cool.
And apparently Tool have one, 4 Degrees. I didn't get to listen to it. And weirder, that in that late 60s time I was talking about, when everyone was doing it, Elvis did it.
Of course he did.
Of course he did. He liked to culturally appropriate that one.
Yeah. But like, it was so cool Elvis was doing it, you know? Like,
what period, Elvis?
Late 60s. So pre white jumpsuit, post army,
post black leather suit, around that black
post,
leather.
Post,
it was that in between period when he didn't. He was floundering a little.
The cool. Huge sunglasses and the rings.
I actually quite like Fat Elvis. Anyway,
do we have any music? Do we have any song titles from Indian musicians who have done it?
Oh my God, but there would be thousands.
Right.
And they play in a particular, they use things called ragas, which is sort of half of a scale, half of a melody. And songs will be based on a particular raga. There's thousands of them, but it's sort of jamming on the raga. It'd be, I guess, like jazz, you'd have a melody and then you would jam on it for hours. And even the sort of pre-part is establishing the raga, that might go 20 minutes. So, like I said, it's very different. And so popping it into a Western song, you are losing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you do ever go to a real sitar concert, we're talking hours.
Right.
And it perhaps is good to sort of read up on it so you know, that was just the tuning part.
Right.
Yeah. 20 minutes and everybody claps.
When you were saying raga, I was just only thinking like reggae.
Yeah, same word, raga, you know, ragamuffin, raga. But yeah, that's their word for scales, or rag.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like a whole different system.
Yes.
We're talking different planet, you know, of music that everything's based on. Yeah. So, you know, maybe it is, you know, people will dabble and hear it. And, you know, we've got, you know, a lot more diverse community in Aotearoa at the moment, too. And so, you know, you can accessibly go to gigs and things that are happening. But yeah, so back to your question about songs, some of the songs will be named after the rug, you know, that they're jamming on. So it might not even be the same as just like, oh, you have a song, you know, because it's not even with singing. It's like a solo instrument
with
the drums. And then maybe a tempura, which is the sitar without the front strings, just jamming at the back as well.
Right.
Yeah. But you don't get like orchestras of them. That'll be the dude.
That'll be something. Like you get three drummers, right. You know, like just.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's right. Just like, oh my God. So, okay, our last song is from 1996. So awesome. REM, we're still trying to, let's experiment with a sitar. Actually, I should have checked us who's playing on it. Did they get a proper player, or did they, you know, because now there are some top players that live in the United States and in London, and you know, you can't even, you're supposed to learn it from somebody important who learned it from somebody important. Like, you have your lineage of who you even learned it off is a whole part of that scene as well.
Of course. Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
And they're called a guru, you know, like,
oh, right, yes.
Which is that sort of learned person that you, so it's, and it's a real intimate relationship when you learn it. It's not just, you know, piano lesson.
Awesome. Shall we play this R.E.M.? Is that it? Is this how we wrap it up, by playing this?
Sure, we'll say goodbye afterwards? Now.
And we speak to you after?
Do we do speak afterwards?
Nah,
do you
want
you
not.
Go on?
All right.
Okay, we'll just leave it on the R.E.M.
Right.
Okay.
Namaste.
Thank you for coming in.
Look up, what do you see? All of you and all of me, fluorescent stars. Some of them they surprise. The bus driver went to write this 4 a.m. this letter. A few to Poppy's little pearls. All the boys and all the girls, sweet tooth, each and every one a little scary. I said your name. I wore it like a badge of teenage film stars, hash bars, cherry mash, and tinfoil tiaras. Dreaming of Maria Callas, wherever she is. This faint thing, I don't get it. I wrap my hand in plastic to try to look through it. Maybelline eyes of girls, boy moves. Can take you far, a star thing. I don't get it. And starting, but some of them they surprise. I can't look it in the eyes. Second off Spanish fly eyes of kerosene, cherry flavored neck of car. I can smell the sorrow on your breath, sweat, victory, song, smell.
I do apologize.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimpke.